you know, at the state level, there's this concern about what will be coming from the federal government. Will they slash Medicaid? And if they do, what does the state do? Does the state use the rainy day fund? Does it use some of the budget surplus? And then what's the collateral impact for cities and towns? Do they get less money from the state because the state's giving less money from the federal government? You see what I'm talking about here? Everyone's nervous. Everybody. Chris Keating, Hartford Current. The headline is a long one. Connecticut faces myriad of financial concerns. Fed money helps state pay thousands of workers. Governor. Written by Christopher Keating. He joins us now here on Brian and Company. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, long headlines. There you go.
Yeah, you got to shorten them. I know you don't do them, but geez.
Yeah, no, I don't write the headlines, but sometimes I get blamed for them anyway. But you know how it goes.
Yep, I do know how that goes. So, how freaked out are they over at the Capitol?
I think there's a lot of concerns. There's definitely concerns, and they have, as you mentioned, they have $4 billion in the rainy day fund, which is a very good thing. Back when Malloy started in 2010, it was zero. Which would kind of be like having like no money in your checking account, which is not very good. So anyway, they got $4 billion in that, and then they're talking about this other $1.4 billion basically in Wall Street money. And Lamont says don't do anything with that in the short term. Basically wait, you know, over the next 2 months and figure out what you can do with that. Under the law, this $1.4 billion that we're talking about has to go to pay down the pensions. But if you change the law, then it does not.
Do you think they're going to... That would be the whole tweaking of the guardrails or what have you, where there's concern about, you know, incrementalism and that becoming something that's permanent, and you have to change a law. So to change the law is a big step. We know that House Speaker Ritter wants to... That's what he wants to do, but do you think they're going to do that?
They might. In other words, right. That is one aspect of the guardrails. They are going to change another aspect of the guardrails that Lamont is in favor of, that he announced back in February. And that has to do with a nuance of the so-called volatility cap. But so this $1.4 billion that we're talking about, that would be a second nuance. So maybe they'll do one and not the other. It depends. I think it all, you know, today is the day before taxes, right? April 14th.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are focusing on this. And if you didn't do your taxes, it's time to do them.
Yeah, it is. And it's time to pay them if you're me. Chris Keating, Hartford Current. Go to current.com to read his stuff. So I guess what I'm confused about is the budget needs to be done by June. When are we going to have clarity? Because if they're going to do something and make a move and to try to address this in any way, they need a little bit of time. When are we going to know how much money we're going to get from the federal government so they can respond?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. We could be talking, you and me, after Labor Day. The federal fiscal year is deeper. It's usually October 1st. Yeah, the plan, because I did ask them this, the plan is to go ahead with, you know, the process that we have here in Connecticut and try to finish up the budget by, you know, June 4th. But, yes, they could come back in. They don't like coming back in August, but they could come back in September and fiddle with things because of what the feds do. So it's very up in the air. It's not going to be cookie cutter finished on June 4th, which is the last day of the session.
So basically they're going to have to pass the budget, assuming levels stay the same, and then have a special session if things are radically different.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. That's good to know. That's some clarity for me. Chris Keating, the Hartford Current. I don't know if I'm making this up, and I don't know the players involved the way you do, so I'm going to ask you a general question. It is a leading question. What's the relationship between House Speaker Matt Ritter and Governor Lamont like?
I would say that they get along. They are both power players. In other words, Ritter is not out there, holding press conferences every 20 minutes. He's a low-key guy, but I don't want to overstate that. In other words, Ritter understands that he's got 102 votes in the House. He's a very, very powerful player, but he can't do everything by himself. So generally, in the end, if anything's going to happen, he and Lamont work on and actually reach a compromise. However, Ritter has to deal with a very diverse caucus, including people who want to raise taxes and all that. And Lamont doesn't want to raise taxes. So Ritter has a tough balancing act. He does not have an easy job.
So, because I say it for two reasons. One is I feel like there's a little bit of a power play between the two of them. And what if Ritter wants to pass a bill one time, taking that $1.4 billion to use it to fill whatever holes there are in the dam, and Lamont doesn't? And do you think Ritter has the power to pass it and then override a veto, or Lamont would never let it get to that point? Like, who's got more hand, if you will, in this situation?
Right. They like to avoid vetoes. If you remember, only about a month ago, they were really in a tough bind, and Lamont did veto a bill, if you recall, about 30 days ago.
But then they cut a deal to avoid an override, though, which they could have gotten. People tell me they could have overridden it.
That is totally correct. When there are difficulties, you got to remember there's a lot of lawyers at the Capitol. They pull a rabbit out of their hat to save face, and they're very good at it. Very good at it. So, in other words, they get together in a room and they say, "What do we have to do to avoid a veto override? Because that's a little bit embarrassing."
Yep. So, what would happen in that scenario? If Ritter wanted to take that $1.4 billion and spend it, and Lamont didn't, what do you think would happen?
Well, the first thing you got to remember, you need a 3/5 vote to pass this because you're changing the guardrails. All right. So this is not just a regular vote. Okay. You need a 3/5. To do that. So that means 91 votes in the House. Normally it would be 76, which is easier to get. So basically, back to the veto override, all you would need is a couple of moderates to say, we're not doing this. You got to remember this. There's 102 votes in the House. You need 101 to override the veto. And it's not 2/3 of those present. It's a hard 101.
Right.
So if five people are absent, you lose.
Huh. Chris Keating.
It's very tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough. Everybody's got to be there, literally.
Real quick, anything else happening today, or what's next for you?
Well, this is tax week. We'll probably be writing something about taxes. Coming up is also the Budget and Finance Committee deadlines. Not this week, right after Easter. So, in other words, Budget and Finance has been working a little bit behind the scenes, but you'll be seeing much more stories on them. Their deadlines are next week, so they'll be working very hard on that this week. And I think you'll see a lot more stories about taxes and the budget and all that kind of jazz.
Oh, sexy stuff. And it's I used to poo-poo it. Now I can't stop reading any of it because I just don't know how it's going to end. I don't know what this is going to look like in 6 months. So
yes, as you said at the top, it's really very important stuff. And sometimes people don't pay attention to it until their program gets cut.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Then it changes everything.
Chris, have a great week, buddy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.